following Packers Green 19 podcast is a production of JS Online and Packers News. And now, here are your hosts, Jim Ozarski and Tom Silverstein.
Hello, everyone. This is Jim Ozarski along with Tom Silverstein of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and PackersNews.com. This is the latest Green 19 podcast following a dreary, rainy, cold, windy, and really boring to watch to a degree. 24-20 Packers victory over the Jacksonville Jaguars on Sunday. It was a nail biter. The Packers defense, of all things, had to come up with two stops in the fourth quarter to win that game. And we'll start there, Tom. This is two home games in a row that the Packers have kind of come out lacking a little bit of fire. And unlike Minnesota, the Jags didn't have enough offensive talent to make them pay for that. But they took them to the wire.
Yeah, it's funny because I wrote sometime last week that the defense had yet to win them a game. You know, it had been pretty much all the offense. And the defense finally came forward, albeit against really a bad offense, and still gave up 100 yards rushing, 4.7 yards per carry. That's way too much. And especially in these conditions. So I don't know what to make of it. I think the biggest concern, and that's what LaFleur seemed to indicate, was they just didn't have any energy, any extra enthusiasm. And I'm just wondering if they need to do something in Lambeau Field or whatever to get the players a little bit more juiced up. I guess it's like that everywhere, but these guys are not responding to it.
Yeah. And it's, well, look, Matt LaFleur, we talked about this a little bit, Tom, at the start of his tenure last year with what he wanted to do in creating a home field advantage. Right. And we wondered what that meant. You know, he came in sort of blustering, if you will, about the lack of one or making it better. Remember, they messed with the flashing lights after touchdowns and wanted the players' input on video messaging. Now, granted, there's no fans to have that kind of work, but maybe to a degree, do they, you know, bring some of that stuff back for the players? You're right, Tom. It's kind of – I mean, he's aware of it. He clearly was, and you're right. I'm just wondering, you know, if it actually does have – tangible.
Well, it's funny that Rodgers indicated that his opinion was, and he told LaFleur, he'd like to have roll out the barrel and YMCA and, you know, all those antiquated songs that Lambeau Field is famous for, to have them play them and, you know, have the video board light up and all that kind of stuff. And maybe he's right. Maybe, you know, in this day and age, you need some sort of validation or adrenaline rush. You know, I almost think that they're going to play better in Indianapolis next week because there will be fans there and fans against them, which I think can be a sort of a motivational force as well. But for whatever reason, this is the second time they've come out in Lambeau Field and looked bad.
Yeah, and I let's start with Aaron Rodgers and the offense, Tom. I'm a little surprised. Were you surprised at how, frankly, ineffectual they were for the better part? I mean, on a windy, windy day, they chose to have a pass-heavy attack. I think only, you know, a dozen or so true handoffs. You know, and maybe that's not how they were called, but that's how it happened. And as a result, I mean, Rodgers was pressured probably more than Jacksonville's pressured anyone to date. Yeah. There were some drops and some squirrely, but I don't know. What can you associate this? I don't want to, I hesitate to say game plan, but you know what I mean.
there were two forces working against them. One was Jacksonville's defense, which they have a pretty decent front four, and they play a 4-3 defense, and they were bringing safety up in the box all the time. They, you know, and then they were squatting on the wide receivers. They were not worried about anybody throwing deep, and that's because of the wind. And so they had a really good game plan, I thought they were understood the conditions, understood the strength of the Packers, which is running the ball, and had a good answer. And so Green Bay didn't know what to really do, I think. Tried to do some short passing early, tried a few long ones. Nothing seemed to be consistent.
Are you surprised by that, I guess? Because I don't know. I would imagine the Packers to a degree, Tom, would – I mean, even with Aaron Rodgers, yes, they would fancy themselves as a running team. You have Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams back playing together for the first time since Tampa Bay. Are you a little surprised that they just – I can't even say they abandoned the run, Tom, because I don't know if they even started it. I mean, they came out throwing into the wind. So are you surprised that they didn't try to impose their will in that way?
Yeah, and they had that ability when they got ahead. Now, the special teams return kind of flipped the momentum. I thought that would have been a good time if they could have stopped Jacksonville, then they could have maybe got the running game going. But then all of a sudden, you know, it's a different game. And plus, I'm sure they wanted to take advantage of being with the wind in the second and third quarters. And, you know, they did on the one Valdez-Scantling touchdown. But, you know, they threw it and just never really got the run game going. And I wonder, too, whether Bakhtiari being back and Turner being thrown back at right tackle, maybe they were a little rusty at their two positions and didn't quite give them everything they were hoping for. It's possible that that played into it too.
Is you mentioned the coverages that Jacksonville played, and it sounds a lot like what you said Minnesota maybe did. Maybe it wasn't the same scheme. We'll have to look at that a little further down the line, I guess. But I mean, Davante Adams, 8 catches, 66 yards, 8.3, a long of 22, which I think they gave him 26 yards initially before he was stripped and a fumble on a catch and run. Any similarity? Did that strike you at all that maybe Tampa and then Minnesota and then, you know, I'm going with this, Tom, like in terms of Davante Adams not catching 17 for 145, rather he's averaging 8 yards a catch. Is there any similarity there to what you've seen from what Jacksonville tried to do Sunday?
Well, what Jacksonville did was play the Seattle defense, which is, you know, you keep one safety in the middle of the field, and he, you know, if you're uneven, you know, you have three receivers to the right. If Adams is in that group, then that safety shaded, and that meant the guy on the other side has a one-on-one. And a couple of times that turned out to be Valdez-Scantling, and he took advantage of it, 4 catches for 149 yards and a touchdown. But there wasn't really anybody else doing anything, and he targeted Tanyan 3 times for 33. That's not bad. I thought he could have I guess they threw it to Aaron Jones 5 times and Jamal Williams, but there was not another wide receiver on there who caught a pass. And that's where they tend to, you know, fall short, is that they need one more guy. And so sometimes I think that should be Irvin, but, you know, he got hurt, and I don't know about him now. I'm starting to wonder if he really has anything to offer them on offense.
Well, if you're listening, put a pin in what Tom said there about needing perhaps another wide receiver. We'll get back to that in a conversation with Brian Gutekunst a little later here. But to your point, you mentioned Tony, and I mentioned this in the Insider, Tom. Three of those of his four targets came in the opening series of the game.
Is that right?
And one of which drew a 29-yard touchy pass interference penalty. Packers could not score on that. It was Miles Jack singled up on Tanyan on those three, one ball for six. And really his long of 23 came because the safety fell down at the line of scrimmage. The Jaguars actually, Tom, even on the game winning touchdown, they had guys falling all over the place on that Lambeau turf. Yeah. I mean, you're right. It's you know, Rodgers, you know, on a windy day, he was pretty good again. You know, I think they missed Adams, you know, late in the game before he came back. Third and three, fourth and three, he was dealing with an ankle. And the offense really kind of – it just – they, A, first of all, didn't score for the first time all season in the first quarter, punted more than they had first downs. And yet you look at the total number of yards, Tom, it's going to end up being okay. It was – but Matt LaFleur did say Aaron Jones – 13 carries, five touches. That's 18. But he even said that wasn't enough. Where it was that kind of the, I don't know. It just seems strange that they couldn't get going with their two best playmakers in Jones and Adams, you know, healthy to start.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know if that was the win because they couldn't stretch the field the way they wanted to with coverage on Adams. And then, Aaron Jones with eight men in the box, but they got to be able to run the ball even when teams put eight men in the box. It's just something you have to do in the NFL. I mean, you want to pass against it. And, you know, if the Colts do that next week indoors, then they'll throw it. But I don't know. They just didn't really seem to have a plan to account for the wind. And, you know, you just kept waiting for Aaron Jones to do something and it never happened.
Yeah, there was, you know, the 78-yard touchdown to Marquez Valdez-Scantling, the big play. He also had, I think, a 30-yard reception somewhere in there or 20.
Yeah, 26 yeah. or something. I can't remember.
Had a strong
18. That was a nice play as well.
Yeah, where it reminded me a little bit of the touchdown in San Francisco where Rodgers broke pocket. It was kind of an extended play. And Valdez-Scantling, you kind of saw the 3 years of experience there, you know, actually finding a spot in the zone. And that mattered because that extended the drive. Valdez-Scantling had a couple of those conversions, Tom, that helped lead to Packers touchdowns.
Yeah, and probably the most encouraging thing for the coaches was – he put his shoulder down on that end of that one run and tried to get extra yardage. He's usually not a very physical player. And he just took it and tried to get as many yards as he could and threw his shoulder into a guy. He's looking like he's playing more confidently. I thought that play with the interception where Rodgers threw it a little behind him and it got picked, if he somehow can get that through to Valdez-Scantling, he's probably still running. And he might add another long touchdown. So they were close there. But that was kind of the story of the day. They just, you know, Aaron Jones couldn't shake that last tackle to get free on the times that he did actually have a decent run. The one, he had that one long run, a 20-yard run. And I thought to myself, when he got in the open field, that he was gone. But Jacksonville, they tackle and they came in and took care of him, you know, got him down on the ground. And I thought for sure when he was hitting that hole that was going to be a TD.
Yeah, no, you're right. Jacksonville, I would say, tackled very well, unlike the Packers tackling early in the game, at least. And that's something we'll have to circle back when we preview this Colts game coming up in terms of a defense playing this offense. But as you started here, Tom, you mentioned talking about the defense not having to win a game, if you will. Adrian Amos, at, I think it was probably your question, Tom, wasn't it? There's Monday or Wednesday said, maybe it was Thursday. These are days all run together now, but
yeah,
said something like, we're going to have to. And they gave up 13 points and the bend but don't break kind of deal. I mean, the one turnover, okay, Jacksonville starts the ball at their 16. They held them to two field goals on a couple other drives. And then when it mattered, fourth quarter, Tom, again, after the go-ahead touchdown, long drive, they get off the field. Packers get the ball back, and for one of the first times this year with a lead, couldn't do anything. Three and out or four and out, had to punt. And the defense had to come right back and finally saw Rashawn Gary with a sack, Preston Smith with a sack, some things we haven't seen in many, many weeks. And looks like finally, at least the defense has one to kind of hang a hat on.
Yeah, they kind of picked it up. I thought, you know, the problem is they have some guys who are playing well and some guys who just aren't doing that much. I thought Kenny Clark had a good game. I thought anytime he was singled up or even when he was doubled, he was coming off his blocks. Rashawn Gary looked really powerful. He looked far more aggressive, and maybe his ankle is better. Maybe that's part of it. But, you know, I didn't really see anybody else. Oh, I thought Darnell Savage played well. I thought he was really aggressive and, you know, got to the ball and missed fewer tackles. But they just don't have a team defense. They need like a swarming team defense like Tampa's was, where, you know, if one guy gets to the ball, he holds them up and four other guys get there and lay the wood. And they don't ever do that.
No, they don't. And usually they're counting on, you know, Za'Darius Smith to make a play. You're right. Rashawn Gary probably looked as good as he has in weeks with that ankle. I thought Christian Kirksey coming back from IR led the team in total tackles with 7. I guess, you know, maybe they benefited from having a rookie quarterback on the other side there, because James Robinson, 23 attempts for 109 yards, 4.7. He had 2 touchdowns taken away from him by his own team, and including a big one, you know, at the end of the game, fourth quarter, he turns the edge, gets the touchdown, and it's called back. Packers end up holding for a field goal, and that 4 points was the difference. Jacksonville taking that off the board for themselves. And a team that was committed to the run game ran the ball, and it almost got them a victory.
Yeah, it did. I was impressed. You know, James Robinson isn't Aaron Jones, but he runs hard, and they had a pretty good run scheme to get him free. And then the Packers were missing tackles on the edge. Once again, it seems like every team can run outside on them, that, you know, their outside linebackers get pinned inside or there's no help where it should be. I don't know what's up with that. But, you know, anytime they face a really good running back, I don't know. They're in trouble.
Yeah, and while Jonathan Taylor, Packers fans listening to this will know, I'm sure, all about the Badgers alum. He's had his ups and downs. That's coming up. Derrick Henry's on the schedule. And, we'll see what the Bears can do. But you're right, Tom. I mean, it's one of those things where it's continually an issue. I do want to ask, before we switch to special teams, what did you make of the corners? Kadar Holman, Josh Jackson outside when Chandon Sullivan, when there was nickel, he would bump in. Or excuse me, Chandon Sullivan was outside, and then if there was a nickel, he would bump inside. No huge pass plays by the Jaguars, enough to kind of keep some drives going. I thought really Josh Jackson, I think, tried to jump a route that he missed that led to a long completion. But other than that, what were your thoughts there? I mean, again, I don't know if that's a benefit of them or Luton quite not having you know, the accuracy and the win. But what did you make of them without King and Alexander?
Well, it was they got from them what they needed in this game with Luton being the quarterback. You know, they just needed those guys not to do something dumb, to tackle well, to be in the right position. I thought Holman did pretty well. There was one time where I thought he was kind of passive on a tackle, but I thought he's really good at short passes and closing on the ball. I think he might have missed a couple of tackles. It's all running together. But they didn't get torched. And it's like being the guys who are holding the spot till, you know, the rest of the guys come back. Shannon Sullivan got a couple breaks. I think he had a crossing run. I think it was Shark or someone dropped a ball across the middle. But, you know, that's – you lose your starting corners and it's always a problem. So I thought they held up about as good as you could want. DJ Chark had 4 catches for 56 yards. I'd take that any day, given his speed.
For sure. And Jair Alexander did see the field briefly Friday at practice as he progresses through the concussion protocol. You know, the Packers don't really practice until Wednesday, so that'll be probably the bigger test for him, if he can actually participate in some degree, to see if he's on track to play in Indianapolis. Kevin King, this quad thing, I mean, the setback clearly was a big one, you know, a few weeks ago. So, you know, who knows at this point, you know, if he might just be 50-50 until he's not. Yeah.
I think Alexander was at the game, wasn't he, on the sideline? I thought some said they saw him.
It's possible.
Would be a good sign.
Yeah, so many guys were in the big coats, Tom, that I, if he was there, I could not make him out. Now, as our dedicated listeners know, we don't only talk special teams when it goes good or bad. We break down special teams quite a bit. And for the better part of a year and a half, Sean Menenga's group, as we have long said, solid, not spectacular, not really prone to the big miscues.
Don't commit penalties.
Yeah, things like that. Now, I mean, look, you have a 91-yard punt return for a touchdown, and that, you know, J.K. Scott had the wind at his back, Tom, so I don't know if that started a domino effect, if it was the wrong kind of kick, because by the time Keenan Cole Sr. started his turn up the field, there's a still shot, Tom. I don't know if you saw this. As he made his break toward the outside, there were 4 Packers – like chest to back, like 4 in a row down a hash mark.
Oh,
and
really?
and as soon as you, I mean, four out of, you know, 10 guys running down the cover in one line all together. So something really messed up happened there. And that clearly got Jacksonville back in the game.
Yeah. And it was a low line drive punt that outkicked the coverage too. It's probably the worst kind of punt you would want. I don't know what he was trying to do there, if it was a miss hit or if he was trying to drive it into the end zone, but it set them up for a big return. And then Cole put on the just hilarious move on J.K. Scott. I don't know. He'll never live that one down.
No, I think in punter, I do believe in the hashtag punters are people too, Tom. But I think most of his brethren will say, you know what, you got to commit and dive.
Yeah.
You can't go caught flat footed on that one. And you know, the other interesting thing we mentioned, Irvin, Tom, is, you know, once he left, Josh Jackson was sent back on punts and he didn't field a couple. There were a couple, you know, downed inside the 5. And then it was Malik Taylor and Jamal Williams playing halves in terms of kick returns. And nothing really happened there. So with Darian Shepherd down, Tom, I mean, are we looking back at a start of last year with this return game?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe they, I don't know. They, you know, if they ever got to the playoffs, well, I might regret saying this, but, you know, would they ever think of just putting Jair Alexander back there? I know he had that muff last year, but I just don't see. Maybe the blocking's not very good and Tyler Irvin's not getting any space, but they're not getting much of anything going on special teams. And they've had a punt blocked and they've had a return for a touchdown. And what have they done on the positive? Oh, and they've had an onside kick recovered against them. And on the flip side, what have they done? Really nothing that I can think of. Can you? Anything spectacular?
They have not made a play in a positive, other than Mason Crosby kicking at his best, arguably of his career, these last two seasons. The best we've said about Sean Menenga's group was not as penalized. And then after Shepherd was replaced with Irvin, steady. And now the ledger is stacking up on the other side there, Tom, as you said. I mean, recovering the hand, you know, the onside kicks against Minnesota and New Orleans back in weeks one and three or two were good. Yeah. But I guess you could argue that's fundamental and that's what they should be. Whereas these last few are potentially game changing going the other way. And now that's on film and Sean Menenga is going to find some coordinators who are going to test that.
Yeah. Yes, he is. They've got some decent coordinators coming up. And, you know, in the Chicago game, his mentors probably got all kinds of things up his sleeve ready to throw out at him. So, yeah, Sean Menenga's honeymoon is over, and he's got to get that right really fast.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things, again, finally, when it comes to special teams, usually you can count on certain plays positively or negatively to affect you, and as they now are going to have to look to some degree for a kick return game, I don't know, maybe Tyler Irvin's ribs will be okay. He took a heck of a shot on that little swing out pass from a couple different Jags defenders. Shepherd, sprained shoulder, Tom, I was told – no short-term IR surgery on the table for him, but it didn't sound like that was just going to be a one-week injury. So going into Indianapolis, they're going to need to figure something out.
Yeah, and, you know, I keep asking myself, why is he on the roster, on the active roster? You know, he must do some things that they like, but from a receiving standpoint, he doesn't really add much of anything. Malik Taylor's been okay. And Juwan Winfrey, they brought him in and he whiffed on a block. And I don't think he played again. I mean, I think he was put in specifically for that play. They must like him as a blocker. And he whiffed. It was right on the goal line. I can't remember if it was must have been a run. But anyway, yeah. They need one more guy so badly. They need Lazard back. And he, it's not like he's a speed burner, but either him or they got to find a way to get Sternberger going. He is a non-entity right now.
And folks, this is why Tom is a consummate pro. I had said earlier, put a pin in that conversation of another playmaker on offense we would get to at the end. And here we are. Tom brings us back. And the reason the lack of a move at the deadline, Brian Gutekunst met with us sort of an impromptu post-game mid-season press conference is because at midnight, about-ish, David Bakhtiari signs a $100 million four-year contract extension. Before we get to that, though, I asked Brian Gutekunst, Tom, if this impending deal or what they knew they'd have to pay Bakhtiari was going to prevent them from adding salary at the trade deadline. And he said, no. Pete Doherty wasn't sure if Goody understood me well enough, maybe through the mask or whatever. But I mean, that's what I was asking, was knowing you have to pay David Bakhtiari what they did, which is going to be $30 million up front, $60 million by next March. They've only got $6.6 million of cap space as of yesterday, as of the other day.
Yeah. Well, I want to see how Bakhtiari's deal is structured, because they might have created some space for themselves this year, or else used it all up. And it sounded like the way they structured it is such that next year it won't be very heavy against the cap. I'm trying to get those numbers, and I hope to get them by Sunday night.
But do you buy that though, Tom? If you're going to pay, regardless of, well, what we do know, and you had this, was a $30 million signing bonus, right?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, some math has to be done there, how they structure. I don't know what Bakhtiari's base was this year as we speak, but I find it a little hard to believe that they couldn't take on, you know, let's just say Will Fuller's $7 million prorated salary, or AJ Green's $10 million prorated. I mean, there had to be a little bit of an issue with them adding a player at the deadline, knowing they have to pay this guy.
They could. I mean, you know, really, you can do whatever you want. It's just how much are you willing to sell out your cap in the future?
Okay.
And if they thought they were, you know, some teams will go for it, and that's not really Gutekunst's way. And really, it might have been a moot point because of what Houston was asking for him.
Right.
But they could have taken on a salary. I think so. Bakhtiari was due $10.5 million, $11 million this year. And by giving him that signing bonus, they could have knocked his base salary down to a million, which would have saved them like $4 million in cap space this year. We'll see when it comes out. But it's very possible they lowered his cap number from his actual cap number this year is 14.7. They could have knocked that down to maybe 10 million, 10.7. So, yeah, they could have done Will Fuller if they wanted to.
Okay.
But they also have some other guys they got to sign, and you have to make that decision.
Yeah, Brian Gutekunst said a couple interesting things. There's so much here, Tom, and we can begin to some more of it on Thursday. Once the Bakhtiari stuff comes in, we have a better grasp of what they're going to do. But quickly, before we talk about the left tackle specifically, Gutekunst did not rule out the idea of extending another player by the end of the year. Unlike Kenny Clark and Bakhtiari, he didn't go out of his way to say these guys are priorities or anything like that. So clearly I think they're okay taking their time. And then B, he referenced free agency next year and thinking some guys are going to be available, anticipating a lot of cap casualties. And so I'm sure thinking he can go bargain basement shopping in a lot of ways. So, but now in terms of the left tackle, Tom, you know, you've been covering this team for a long time. A, any surprise that it was at midnight on a week 9? And then B, can you contextualize it a little bit? Kenny Clark just got 77.7 in camp. The quarterback's cap number goes to 36 next year. Za'Darius Smith's goes to almost 21 next year. So yeah, Bakhti, let us know. What do you think of the deal? And then just in general with the massive contracts that now this team has with just a handful of guys.
Well, they had to pay Bakhtiari. I said it all along that he was not going to take less than Laremy Tunsil, who received 22 million. Once that was set, that became the bar for him. And that's what he ended up getting. And he was going to get that on the market too. So they just had to do that deal. There's just no ifs, ands, or buts around it. They had to do it. Now, the ramifications of it are next year, they're going to probably have to trim some cap. Could be, you know, fairly, you know, a well-known person, could be, you know, a couple of guys that could be not re-signing some guys. But what they're really counting on for not next year, but the year after, is that the cap is going to go way up, that the television deals are going to get renegotiated or negotiated, and then there'll be a cap explosion and they'll be okay. So, you know, it's not a bad bet. I kind of think that's going to happen, especially, you know, once the COVID pandemic is under control, people will be more probably really, you would think that they would be eager to get out and go to games and do all the things that make money for the NFL. So I would say that that's pretty much what they were thinking. And the structure of Bakhtiari will be such, I think, that it won't count that much against the cap next year. But yeah, it's adding up. It's adding and adding and adding. And, you know, that's what you find with, you know, teams that go to the Super Bowl. Guys need to get paid because they just had the best year of their career, and you have to lose some. And the Packers keep paying guys. At some point, you know, it catches up to you.
I give David Bakhtiari credit in his post-game contract press conference. Essentially said, we're not talking unless you're going to make me the highest paid left tackle in football. I earned it and I deserve it. I give him all the credit in the world for that and sticking to it and making and telling Russ Ball and Brian Gutekunst, say, make it work on your end. I thought what you were going to say there, Tom, about 2022, what they're counting on. I thought you were going to go rookie contract in terms of making all of that money work.
Oh, with the quarterback. Yeah. You know, I'm not even thinking about that right now. And I don't think they are either. I think their cap calculations all include Rodgers, because they were in this situation. Gutekunst was here when they had Favre, and they kept thinking, you know, time is getting closer and closer. And then, you know, he kind of bounced back a little in 06 and then had a really good year in 07. And so I think they're going to just let the Rodgers thing play out.
Yeah, I mean, I think he is. I think Gutekunst told Pete Doherty, RP Doherty, that way in camp or before the season, Tom, and he's reiterated it since, that if they go on and win some Super Bowls and the quarterback wins some MVPs, the Packers feel they're the best in both worlds. Then, So we'll wrap this up. We will be back with you guys on Thursday. It is now a nationally telecast game down in Indianapolis, about 3:30 local time. I don't know where the Colts stand as we record this, but they had the number one ranked defense in football, even though the Jets are part of that equation. So Tom and I, we will be breaking all of that down for you Thursday. Of course, if there's any other fallout in terms of the Bakhtiari structure and some things Tom can dig up regarding the cap and just, you know, because people are interested in that. I mean, you know, again, it's always who's next. And not only is it Jones and Lindsley and King, oh, guess what? Number 17 has 1 year left on his deal as well, by the way. Lot of stuff to think about. But the Packers win 24-20, move to 7-2, keep pace at the top of the NFC, which was necessary. And, you know, they got a big one. They have a chance to really – you know, make a statement, I think, in Indianapolis, Tom, at least offensively, which they have yet to do, quite frankly. They haven't really put it on a really good defense in a while. So I'm curious to see that. And we will be there and we will be with you. So make sure we are traveling. We'll be at Lucas Oil Stadium, the house Peyton Manning built. So make sure to head over to PackersNews.com, subscribe to it, download the app, put on the push notifications, because you would have wanted that. Like, if you want, were bored with this game and went to go get some like nachos or beer, then you would have got buzz saying that David Bakhtiari signed a massive extension. So stuff like that you want on. And then, of course, if you're local, jsonline.com/deals, you want to subscribe there as well. So for Tom, I am Jim. We will talk to you later in the week.